The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 61. The world record for the largest family reunion is 4,514 people by the Porto-Belev family in France. But that won't be the world record for long. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Sherry, and whether this is your first time tuning in or whether you've been devouring the EPOP Travel Podcast like some men devour the Encyclopedia Britannica, more on that in a little bit, I want to thank you for joining us today and for all your support and for making us the number one rated travel podcast on iTunes. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We are now rolling into week two of podcast gluttony. If you don't know what I'm talking about, we are recording and releasing an episode every single weekday, Monday through Friday, for the entire month of September. That is 22 episodes in all. That is about five times more than we've ever done before. And if you like what we're doing, please let us know, because if you do like it, we're going to continue doing it. But the only way that we're going to know if you like it is if you tell us. So you can send me an email at trav@extrapackofpeanuts. You can also send me an email if you have a reader question, because one of the shows we'll be doing is reader questions. So if you have a question, trav@extrapackofpeanuts.com, put in podcast question in the subject line. I'll get that. You may just have your question read and answered on the podcast. You can also, of course, subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can leave a review on iTunes, Stitcher, however you listen to it. That's going to let us know that you really like this. And then in essence, we're going to continue doing it. On today's show, I'm excited to have a guest that I honestly never thought I'd be able to get on the podcast. And for the last 8 years, I've been following this person. I've been reading everything that he's written. He's written multiple New York Times best-selling books. He's been on all the late-night shows. He's been written up in basically every major publication in the world. Everyone says that this guy is hilarious. He is hilarious. And I've always thought, man, if I could live a life like him, it's so interesting. How does he do it? I'd love to be able to live a life like him, or at least be able to sit down and talk to him about how he's able to do so many cool things. And now is my chance. I've had the opportunity to get him on the podcast. We actually met in person in Portland while watching a unicyclist blow fire out of his bagpipes while wearing a mask. That is no joke. We bonded over that. And now I'm proud to present to you AJ Jacobs, New York Times bestselling author of The Know-It-All, Drop Dead Healthy, Year of Living Biblically. And we're going to talk about how he's able to take a life and make it so interesting. So if you've been listening to a lot of these podcast interviews and you thought, well, I can't travel all the time, and I'm not location independent, I'm not a digital nomad, I want my life to be interesting like that, AJ is going to tell you how to do that. Even if you think your life is mundane and boring, he's going to tell you how to flip that upside down and to live a life full of passion and full of energy. We're also going to talk about how travel can be a mindset and how you can quote unquote travel while still being in your hometown. So AJ has a lot of cool stories, a lot of funny stories that he's going to give to you, and a lot of really neat takeaways. Also, make sure that you listen until the end, because AJ is going to invite you, that's right, you, the EPOP listener, to help him break a world record. I am going to be there no matter what. So AJ wants all of us to help him break a world record. He's going to tell you all about that, his next biggest project, at the end of the podcast. All right, I'm really excited about this. Let's get into the interview with AJ Jacobs. Hello, travel nerds, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, the show that teaches you how to travel more while spending less. I'm Trav, the creator of Extra Pack of Peanuts, and with me today is someone who is proudly described by Time Magazine as the world's best human guinea pig, who Jon Stewart describes as hilarious, and who also knows that an abalone has five anuses. AJ Jacobs, New York Times bestselling author of The Know-It-All, The Year of Living Biblically, and Drop Dead Healthy, and most importantly, my cousin. AJ, thanks so much for coming on the show, and welcome.
Oh, great to be here. Really a pleasure.
AJ, I've told listeners in the intro of the show that it's going to be a little bit different than other shows in that, yes, we're going to touch on travel a little bit, and you do a fair amount of travel yourself, but that the main reason I'm so excited to have you on the show today is that you have found a way to create your own dream lifestyle, to take things that you find interesting and build your lifestyle around them, oftentimes in very intensive and creative ways, and really just keeping your life fun through a series of different challenges and experiments. Can you give us a little bit of background, you know, what you thought you'd get into when you were young and how you've now become this human guinea pig?
Well, yeah, I'm very lucky that I'm able to make a living doing what I do. I'm a writer and I like to write about my own life. I like writing first person, but the problem is my life, my real life is quite boring. There's nothing interesting going on. So I sort of put myself in extraordinary situations and then write about my experience there. And a lot of it has to do with extreme self-improvement. So, because I need a lot of improvement. I mean, I am a fixer-upper. So, I did one where I needed to improve my mind. So I read the encyclopedia from A to Z. Another where I felt I needed to get healthy. So I tried every exercise regimen, every diet known to mankind. And another one was I had no training, I grew up with no religion. As I say in my book, I'm Jewish in the same way the Olive Garden is Italian. So not very. But I wanted to learn about religion, so I dove in and followed all the rules of the Bible. So these are experiments, and they often involve travel, but it's very much a travel mindset. It's all about experimenting, putting yourself out there, trying new things. To me, that is one of the secrets to happiness, trying new things.
Yeah, and I think you put that in a really good way, because so many times the reasons that I like traveling is that I'm exposed to new experiences, new people, new languages, new food. Everything is new, so your senses are alive. Then you come home and you're on autopilot and you don't even pay attention to what you're doing. All of a sudden, like 3 months go by and you couldn't even tell anyone what you did in those 3 months. I think that's really cool that you're immersing yourself in that mindset without even having to go outside of, you know, New York City or wherever anyone lives.
Well, it's true. And actually, my family, I have three kids, and we're going to London this summer. We got to the airport and tried to check in. My son's passport had expired 2 months before, so that was horrible. But we got to stay in New York for an extra 3 days, and I just tried to adjust my mindset and reframe it like, I'm a traveler in New York. Let's see what new things I can do. So I went with my kid to see this Jeff Koons weird sculpture in Rockefeller Center. So yeah, you can have the travel mindset even if you stay at home.
Yeah, for sure. And we've had other guests on. Alistair Humphreys talked about micro adventures. And that was the idea of, like, you know, any time outside of your 9-to-5, taking little adventures, whether it be going to see some weird exhibit or, you know, just doing things around where you are that keep you motivated and keep you experiencing new things. For you, how did the idea of being this human guinea pig first come about? Because you mentioned you read the Encyclopedia Britannica A to Z, cover to cover, and that was your first book. Was that the first experiment you took on, or had you always kind of done little things?
I'd always done little things, and I was working at newspapers and magazines, so I would do tiny little adventures. One of the first was that I looked exactly like an actor. He's sort of a B-level actor. You might not have heard of him, but his name is Noah Taylor. And he was in a movie a long time ago, like 15 years ago, called Shine. It was nominated for Oscars. It was about a schizophrenic pianist. And I looked exactly like the guy who played this. And people would mistake me on the street. So we decided, I was working at Entertainment Weekly magazine, we decided I should go to the Academy Awards. And I would pretend to be this guy, and because he wasn't going. He didn't like going to award shows. So I thought, okay, let's see what it's like to be a movie star for a night. And I got to tell you, it's fantastic. I mean, it was like 5 hours of people telling me how brilliant I was. And my ego just went crazy, even though I knew technically they weren't complimenting me. But it just, that seemed like splitting hairs.
Exactly. Semantics.
It was an amazing experience. And I don't do much of that undercover stuff anymore, but that was one of the first that got me hooked and seeing, like, here I can experience something wild and forcing myself to have chutzpah. You know, that's what us Jews say, chutzpah, the cojones. Because I'm actually not a very bold person, but I pretend that I'm bold, and I force myself to do these things, and while I'm in it, I'm just having a great time, and I forget that I'm scared.
Yeah, well, the thrill kind of overcomes that fear once you take that first step, right? I mean, originally, you're like, well, what if I get kicked out, or this or that? And then once you're in, I assume that you're just so in the moment that you're like, well, what's there to be afraid of then once you actually do it?
Totally. Absolutely. And that's a big part of it. And just psyching yourself up. And I work at Esquire magazine, and I once interviewed George Clooney, who was great. And I asked him, you know, because he is so confident. Like, he walks into a room and he exudes confidence. And I just don't have that. So I said, how do you do that? And he said, well, I just pretend. He said, when I was playing baseball in high school, I would just get up to the plate and I wouldn't say, am I going to hit a home run? I would say, which field am I going to hit a home run to? Am I going to hit a home run to left or to right or to center? It's just this almost delusional optimism. I kind of love that. As long as you don't get dangerous, you know, it can be dangerous, delusional optimism. So you have to balance that. But this sort of sense of I can do it, it's made my life so much better.
And for those of you who don't know what AJ looks like, I would say that you kind of look like George Clooney. Maybe you should go to the Oscars as him next time, right?
Now that's some delusional optimism on your part. Thank you for that.
That's the too much delusional optimism. You've written four books so far. You've taken on a ton of different experiments. One that you've already talked about with, you know, going and pretending to be an actor, and that kind of kicked off this idea. The Know It All was your first book, and that's when you read the Encyclopedia Britannica cover to cover. That's the first book that I read of yours that I loved. Was it much more difficult than it seemed? Because, you know, originally people probably, like when I first heard about it, I was like, oh, that's pretty cool, but is it really that hard? And then you kind of document your struggle with it. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. It was a challenge for sure. I'm not good at, many of your listeners are probably good at climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, but I'm not very good physically like that. But this was sort of my intellectual Mount Kilimanjaro. And it came about because my dad started to read the encyclopedia when I was a kid, but he didn't quite finish. He made it up to the middle of the letter B around boomerang or something. And so I thought maybe I should try to finish what he began and remove that black mark from our family history. And I loved it because, you know, there were parts that were excruciatingly boring, but there were also parts that were incredibly fascinating. It was a great mix. And if you're in a boring part, you just like hang on, you know, something good is going to come around the corner. It just blew my mind. There were so many new perspectives I learned. And also, I got a little too enthusiastic. I will say that. Like, I started to spew my knowledge a little too liberally. My wife started to fine me. She penalized me $1 for every irrelevant fact I inserted into conversation. So, you know, she would say, oh, I have a headache. And I would say, did you know that the Bayer Aspirin Company invented heroin? Which is true. They did. It was originally it was a cough suppressant. They invented it as a cough. Turned out it had some other side effects. So they took it off the market, but it was a wonderful time. And it was almost like traveling inside my mind, going on this great adventure around the world, reading about all these wild different cultures. And it made me want to travel for real and experience some of these places in real life.
Yeah, so you got to read about all these cool things. Your wife probably had a new purse by the end of every day, right?
Exactly.
Like, how did that work day to day? Because I remember when I first read the book, I thought, well, all right, the Encyclopedia Britannica is big, but is it that big? But then you kind of go into just how long it took you. How, you know, give us the scope of this project.
Oh, yeah, it was. It took me about a year and a half, and I read for about 6 to 8 hours a day. And it was because it's 44 million words. It's 33,000 pages. These are tiny type big pages. So it was, I read everywhere. I read on the treadmill. I read on the subway. I took it with me. We went on a trip to Italy, and I took, this was a long time ago. So this was sort of before you could read everything on the internet. And I took these three huge volumes in my bags. I thought that security was going to bust me. You know, why do you have these three huge volumes? But I snuck it through, and it was difficult. It was certainly difficult, but very rewarding in the end.
And was that the first major project you had taken on, you know, you said a year and a half, one where you really immersed yourself outside of just this one-off, I'm going to go and pretend to be an actor. Was that the first big one you took on?
That was the first big experiment. That's right. And then after that, I did one about living by the rules of the Bible. And after that, I did one about the health.
Let's talk about that then, the year of living biblically, because I think on the surface, to most people, that would seem much more daunting than the Encyclopedia Britannica cover to cover, because now you're not just reading on your own, like you said, traveling in your mind, but you're actually having to do stuff that makes you stick out in a very interesting way. You said the basis of the book was to follow the rules of the Bible. Can you give us a little bit about the experience? Like, how did it turn out? What were some of the things that you did?
Well, yeah, the idea was, I knew nothing about religion, but I want to learn. And millions of people say they follow the Bible to the letter. So I thought, well, let me try that. Let me see what really happens. I wrote down all the rules. And I said, I'm going to follow everything without picking and choosing. So the famous ones, the Ten Commandments and love your neighbor, but also the obscure one. There are hundreds of obscure ones. The Bible says you cannot shave the corners of your beard. I didn't know where the corners were, so I just let the whole thing grow. And by the end, I had this huge topiary hanging from my chin. I mean, I looked like a crazy person. When I traveled, I spent a lot of time at airport security. So that was a hint. But yeah, everything from that to wearing a robe and sandals, and the Bible says you should stone adulterers, and I was able to stone one with, I used very small stones, like pebble size, because I didn't want to go to jail. So it was a fascinating year, and I learned so much. I took away a lot that has made my life better, and I also learned that following the Bible literally probably not the best approach. Yeah, it was an education in what's good in religion and then how not to practice religion.
So tell us a little bit about this stoning, you know, someone, because I assume if people say, oh, you followed it to a T, that might be the thing that comes up most, right? Like, oh, you actually stoned someone? How were you able to stone someone?
Well, it happened, it was sort of in the middle of the year, and I was really getting into it. So I had on the robe and sandals and beard, walking stick, and I was in Central Park just taking a stroll, and this man came up to me and said, why do you look like that? What's going on? And I said, I'm trying to follow all the rules of the Bible, from the Ten Commandments to stoning adulterers. And he says, well, I'm an adulterer. Are you going to stone me? And I say, well, yeah, that would be fantastic. I mean, I was so excited to have an offer. So then I took the stones out of my pocket because I had been carrying these stones for weeks.
You never know when you're going to run into an adulterer who wants to get stoned.
You never know. Exactly. It was a delightful surprise. And I showed him the stones. As I said, they were small. He was very aggressive. He grabbed the stones out of my hand and threw them at me. So I thought, an eye for an eye, that's part of the whole deal. I could stone, throw one back at him. So that was how I checked that off the list.
Very cool. And then after this year of living biblically, how did your wife respond to that? Because the Britannica one, okay, it takes up your time. She doesn't want you quoting all these random facts, but you still look normal. You're still acting normal to the outside world, right? But this year of living biblically, I mean, you're wearing clothes with no mixed fibers and all that crazy stuff. How did that work with your day-to-day life, with things like going to work, you know, with your family and them probably thinking you're crazy and you dropping them off to school and stuff like that in a row?
Yeah, it was definitely a challenge. I will say, some parts of it she loved, because I do believe that it taught me a lot of lessons about, like, being more grateful, and little things like not gossiping as much and not lying and coveting, which I still did, but I tried to cut down. But then there were things that she absolutely hated, the beard. In Leviticus, it says that you cannot touch a woman when she's menstruating. And if you take Leviticus really literally, it says that you cannot sit in a seat where a menstruating woman has sat. So she found that offensive and sat in every seat in our apartment. And I was forced to stand for it most of the year. There was a mixed reaction.
And then your next book then. So you did that, and by now you've done two crazy experiments. And your next one, which I found very, very interesting as well, was Drop Dead Healthy. And you said, you know, you're this prototypical person who's unhealthy, doesn't really have these great habits. And then you took on basically, you know, nowadays when we talk about health, there's all types of fads and stuff that works, stuff that doesn't work, stuff that people say works and then doesn't, you know. You know, give us the background a little bit on that book, because that was really, really intriguing. And you did some really cool stuff with that.
Well, as you say, I was in terrible shape. I wasn't traditionally fat. I was what they call skinny fat. So I looked like a snake that had swallowed a goat. Really just a big stomach in there. So my wife is like, you know, you got to get in shape. And I thought, why not try everything and see what works, what doesn't. So as you say, I tried every diet. I tried paleo and raw food. I tried every exercise regimen. I wrote the book while walking on a treadmill. I have a treadmill desk. You probably read about those now. And that's one of the big changes. I still use the treadmill desk. I love it. I would be on it right now, but it's a little distracting because my head would be bopping to the side and you might hear some whirring in the background. But my preference would be to be on it right now.
And then some of the big takeaways from that book. What were some of the things that you learned for you personally that worked and things that you were like, hey, I can make these small, subtle changes or maybe even a little bigger than small, subtle, but that really have affected you in a positive way when it comes to health?
One thing is that it's not all about exercise and food. Those are important, but it's also about sleep and also stress. There's tons of research on how bad stress is for you. And one of the best ways to relieve it is to be social. There's a lot of studies that show having a tight-knit, close community of supporters and family and friends is actually really tied to how long you live. So I now don't feel guilty when I go out to dinner with friends and have a couple of glasses of wine, because that's actually healthy. That's making me live longer. You know, if you are so obsessed with health that you spend all your time at the gym and finding, the right non-GMO asparagus, with just the right amount of selenium, that is not necessarily the healthiest lifestyle.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. It's always a balance. And we talk a lot on this show, too, of people saying, you know, I want to start my own business or I want to go off on my own and create this lifestyle. And I always tell people the hardest part is creating this balance between keeping the lifestyle that you want, you know, staying with friends and traveling and doing the fun stuff, and then creating the other part of the life. And I'm sure you've run into that sometimes too, when you've immersed yourself, is like remembering why it's still fun, because sometimes we can get so into it. We can get so into building a business or doing, you know, making sure we're living biblically or whatever it is, that then we forget to do all the things that we wanted to do. You know, we want to create a life because we want to do it. And all of a sudden the business is taking up more time than if you had a regular job or what have you. How have you been able to balance that lifestyle other than going out and drinking glasses of red wine with your friends?
Well, it is a challenge. I mean, one thing is just what you said, trying to keep in mind what the greater purpose is. And with health, to me, the greater purpose is to be around, to see my kids grow up and get married. And so just remembering that if I become too obsessed with that, then there's really no point to just focusing on one thing, because you got to look at what is the greater purpose? Why am I doing this? And it's to have a happy life and make the world better. To me, those are the only two things that really matter, making sure that you have a happy life and making the world better so other people do.
Yeah, and most people read your book or they know about you and they probably think like, well, that's great, you know, but I would never want to do it. I never want to, you know, wear a robe around New York and bring my sheep everywhere. And personally, I read the first sentence of the note, all the very first book of yours I read, very first article I had read, anything like that. I was hooked right away. I remember even telling Heather, my girlfriend at the time, now my wife, you know, I want to be AJ Jacobs.
Well, thank you, Travis. I mean, I think you are. You are, you know, I love what you do. And I think it's very similar, because my idea, you don't have to grow a crazy beard and wear a robe, but the idea is introducing small elements of experimentalism into your life. And it could be tiny. It could be trying a new toothpaste every month. It could be going to work a different way. It could be using your left hand instead of your right hand to eat. Just any little change that you can make. Scientists talk about your brain, when you do things over and over again, it creates these ruts in your brain. And so doing something new is actually good for your brain. It increases your creativity, your ability to make connections between unlikely ideas. So to me, it doesn't matter whether you have the beard and sandals. It's all about trying new things, which is what you do with your traveling.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, too, for people to realize it doesn't always have to be this huge leap. It doesn't have to be, I'm going to quit my job, I'm going to move to Thailand, I'm going to live on the beach, or I'm going to read the Encyclopedia Britannica A to Z. If you want to take a big leap, that's great, but you can take these incremental steps to either get you closer towards your goal. If it is, I want to move to Thailand, maybe you start a business on the side, you make some money, you build it up, you know, or not only towards your goal, but it can just add some flavor to your life. And it, like you said, it keeps your mind stimulated. And I guess for you, you know, for me, I understand the draw of why you do this because I want to be AJ Jacobs, right? But a lot of people are thinking, why does he do it? I guess that is the why, right? To just kind of keep things really exciting because we only really go through this life once.
Totally. Some people use the phrase a method writer, you know, method actor is when you really get into your role. And there's something appealing about that because you get to see life from the perspective of a totally different person. You know, if you're playing, a dock worker or a surgeon, you just try to get into that mindset. And I love that. So that's what I try to do with my writing. And I think people can do that, whatever their profession is, just try to see the world from someone else's point of view. And that could be as simple as reading stuff that's totally outside your own little specialty. And I try to do that. I try to read really weird stuff. I'm pretty liberal, but I like to look at those really conservative websites. It sometimes raises my blood pressure, but I find it fascinating just to see the world from their point of view.
Yeah, one neat thing that I've tried to do, and I know a few other travelers I've had on have said they enjoy this as well, is, you know, just going to different festivals or religious ceremonies. You know, whether you're Muslim, whether you're Christian, no matter what your affiliation, it's always neat for me to go to other places of worship or other festivals and kind of see how people act there, because it's just really interesting and it really kind of gets to the heart of their culture and what they live for. And I think that's something that people can do anywhere in the world. It doesn't have to be somewhere exotic. You could go to the church down the road that you've never been to and just experience it. And it's going to make you feel uncomfortable for sure, because you're going to be the new person and people will probably know it, especially if it's a smaller place. But it really just, it makes you feel so alive. Like I've said that before, but your senses are so alive doing it because you're so in tune with what's happening because you don't know what's going to happen.
I agree. I mean, I got to say, Travis, that I love. And I love, during my year, I did a lot. I would visit all sorts of Christian scientists or Hasidic Jews. You probably have heard of serpent handling, where they hold snakes, poisonous snakes, and that's how they worship. So I went down to one in Tennessee, and that was wild. I did not touch the snakes. You know, there's a limit to how much I'm willing to do this guinea pig thing, and dying from a snake bite was not something I was willing to do, but it was fascinating. And you know what? That is my favorite kind of travel, is going to these interesting slice of life festivals. I have twin boys who are 7. So a couple of weeks ago, we went to Twinsburg, Ohio, and went to the official Twins Festival, where 5,000 twins descend on this little town, and it's fantastic. And they do also, you know, singing and dancing and shows, and it's not just twins. Actually, there are triplets. The triplets kind of look down on the twins. Like, the triplets are like a little cooler. And then the quadruplets, there are some quadruplets, and they look down on the triplets. And so it's a little bit of a hierarchy. My kids are fraternal twins, which are like the identical twins. I think they won't say it, but they're kind of like they're not real twins, you know, but we had a great time nonetheless. So that's one of my favorite ways to travel, is go to these weird conferences and events.
Well, next year I'll have to get my sister, who's my twin. We're also fraternal, so we're going to be at the bottom of the pecking order there. But maybe we can all make a pilgrimage out to Twinsburg, Ohio. I wish I had known.
Oh, you will love it. You got to go. I'm serious. There's people with t-shirts that say, you know, fraternal twins are the coolest. So they're sort of a little fraternal twins pro-rights movement. But yeah, and the t-shirts alone are worth it because, you know, it's like woo mates, every bad pun you can think of. There was people with signs that said, save water, share a womb. You know, I'm the evil one. No, I'm the evil twin. So it was just a fantastic experience. And all the twins are encouraged to dress alike. So you can really see. And there's contests. You can have what is the most look-alike twins and the least look-alike twins. So maybe you guys could enter the least look-alike.
There we go. Me and my sister do not look very much alike. So we might be able to take that crown down. And AJ, I think that is so cool. And I think that's what people forget when they hear travel and they think grandiose. I'm going to the Taj Mahal, going to the Eiffel Tower. You know, I'm going to backpack around the world for years. And listen, so a lot of people do it. I do it. I love it. But it can just be a way of thinking. And if you open up your mind to that and you say, hey, there's a thing in Twinsburg, Ohio, that's a 6 or 7 hour drive from where I am. I'm going out there this weekend. It's just going to flip your perspective because you're doing something different from 99% of the people who say, well, I'm going to sit at home and mow my grass and maybe watch a little TV and barbecue. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but you're just getting out of your comfort zone a little bit and experiencing something that a lot of people wouldn't take the time or put the effort into doing.
Absolutely. And it was my favorite weekend of the year. I just loved it. And actually, I went to another family related, because I think we'll talk about it in a minute, but my next project is all about family. And I went to this family reunion in West Virginia who held a couple of years ago. It's been broken since. They had the biggest family reunion ever. And it was fascinating. It was like 3,000 people, the Lilly family of West Virginia. I live in New York, so it was interesting because you walk in there and it looks like Brooklyn. All these guys with the big beards and the suspenders and the trucker hats. But they are not doing it ironically. Like, they are definitely, and the tattoos. So it's weird that they were visually exactly like Brooklyn, but very different intellectually. And I loved it. I loved hearing their point of view and seeing their world.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that in 1 second, your newest project. But before that, I want you to maybe offer some people some advice. You know, a lot of people are going to say, hey, I don't want to live biblically, or I don't want to travel around the world. I don't want to exactly do what Travis or what AJ is doing, but I do want to take control of my life versus having my life control me. And what are some steps that people could take to do that? We've kind of already talked about little tiny things. But if someone was to say to you, like, AJ, you have this cool life, you get to do all this stuff, you know, you really are doing what you want to do as opposed to being what you're told to do, what would you tell someone to do? How could someone approach flipping their life upside down like that?
Well, part of it is what we talked about, this idea of chutzpah, of just pretending to be totally confident and taking a dive and seeing what happens and knowing you're going to fail a lot of the time. You know, I fail all the time, even many times a day I fail, but realizing that's part of life and not being afraid of failure, to me, that's an incredibly important secret. Also, in terms of taking control, I think what you said is so true. Often with my schedule, I'll feel like I'm at the mercy of my schedule. You know, the schedule, I just have no time in the day. All these, I'm just reacting to different little emails and crises. So one secret I found very helpful is that I will carve out 15 minutes a day and say, these 15 minutes, I'm just going to think of new ideas. I'm just going to sit there, turn everything off, laptop, cell phone, and I'm going to brainstorm. And it could be places to go. It could be book ideas, article ideas, new business ideas. But to me, that is, it's sort of a sacred space. You really, because I think nowadays, if you want to be an entrepreneur, as a writer, I've become much more of an entrepreneur because you have to. You can't rely on the old system. So, and to me, the lifeblood of entrepreneurs are ideas. You cannot be an entrepreneur without coming up with interesting ideas. So that is a ritual I recommend to anyone. Take 15 minutes a day and just write down your ideas. 95% of them are going to be crap, at least in my case. I don't know, maybe you have a higher hit rate.
Maybe we have some geniuses listening to this, but certainly not me.
Exactly. And then acting on the ones that really stay with you. You know, you think back 3 days ago, that actually might work. And then acting on it. Those are just some steps that I take. The idea of just having an open mind and looking for ideas everywhere. You know, there's one writer friend of mine who talks about it's important to have two heads, the head, you know, that's living the life. And then there's this sort of head on top of your shoulder that's looking at life and saying, this is interesting. What's weird about this? What can we do with this? How can we improve this? So try to have that second head all the time, looking at life and coming up with ideas.
Do you have a time? You said you take 15 minutes out of a day, and I love that. I want to talk on that for just a second, but do you have a specific time that you do it? Do you do it in the morning? Do you do it at night? Do you find a time that there's a specific time that really works for you? Is it in the middle of the day, or do you kind of do it whenever you have time?
It is much better, the way you said, to have a specific time, and I don't. I should, but I try to fit it in. Another thing I do is, even if I've done that 15 minutes, if I am on the subway and instead of reading the newspaper on my iPhone, I will say, okay, I'm going to think in my head during this subway ride and try to come up with a couple of interesting ideas, whether or not they turn into anything. So it's actually, in the last couple of years, it's changed my life so much for the better, because people get so angry about when someone's late for a lunch. And I don't anymore, because there's so much to do. I can, first of all, I have all these books on my iPhone, but also I can think, you know, that to me is such an important part of my job. So I'll have, like, when I leave the house, I'll come up with five things I want to think about, and I'll have them lined up like jets on a runway. And I'll think about one while I'm walking two blocks, and then I'll move to the next one. And it's made my life so much better. I call it disciplined daydreaming. Daydreaming is important, but when I let my mind just wander, it usually wanders into things like, you know, why didn't I buy drugstore.com, the domain name, 10 years ago? I could have made like $8 million, like just totally fruitless and unuseful ideas. So I try to sort of train my mind to do something a little more interesting.
Yeah, and I'm a big proponent of that as well. Like you said, it should probably be 15 minutes sometime during the day at the set time, because then you are really not letting yourself react to life, but you're saying, hey, hold on 15 minutes. It's only 15 minutes. But like you, I find it hard to like discipline myself enough. I think we're very much alike in that. But with that too, I love the discipline daydreaming idea. And what I always do too is a thing I call brain dumping. And I you know, I sit down with a piece of paper or a notepad and a pen. And, you know, I have all these ideas running through my head. And it's like 20, 30, 40 things. I think a lot of people who are entrepreneurial or who want to create their own life have so much going on that they can't sift through it. And so I'll just write down, like you said, every idea. 95% of them are crap. You know, I write it down. It, you know, I don't even look at it again. But what it does is it gets it out of my mind to clear space for all the other ideas. You know, I found once I write it down, then I'm not thinking about it constantly. It's right down. I know I'm not going to forget about it. I don't know. Subconsciously, that must be it. I say like, all right, it's down. I can move on to the next thing. And I've found that to be so useful. You know, a lot of times it's when I'm laying in bed at night, I can't sleep, and it's just all these ideas like we all have. And I, you know, I'll get up, I'll write stuff down until everything's out of my head. It might be 10 minutes. It might be 20. And then I'll go back to bed and I'll sleep like a baby. I think that's something that people can use who feel overwhelmed with all the thoughts that they have running through their head.
Totally. I do that too. I have a document on my computer that must be like, you know, 800 pages of all the ideas I think of. I put a few on every day. And as we discussed, they're mostly terrible. But I love every, you know, couple of weeks, I'll read through them and be like, oh, that's interesting. Maybe I can pursue it in this way. And I do the same thing with all of the tasks that I have to do, you know, and they could be small or big. You know, they could be like, I want to have a TV show, or it could be small, like, you know, I have to buy a new hard drive. But I love having a list. And I got that from Getting Things Done. You know that book? It's a good book. So he said, just make a list of every single thing that you have to do. And I find, just like you, it's very freeing to have it written down all in one place.
For sure. And one of the ideas for you that has stuck and that you're actually, you know, going forward with is your next book and your next huge project. And we've touched on it a little bit. It has to do with family reunions, and it's pretty epic, and you're going to attempt to break a world record, and we're all the listeners here are going to help you do it, because I'm going to show up if I can. I hope everyone else will. So can you give us a little scoop, a little bit of a sneak peek of what you have planned here?
Absolutely. And you're right. I want all of your listeners involved, because the idea is that I am helping to build the biggest family tree in history, and I want you on it. I want every one of your listeners on it. And then on June 6, 2015, I'm going to hold the biggest family reunion ever here in New York City, and it's going to be thousands of people. It's going to be like, hopefully, like Woodstock meets a family reunion, meets a TED conference. There's going to be talks. Sister Sledge is going to play We Are Family. I have hired them. And the idea is that we are really one big family. We've always heard this, but now for the first time in history, we have these amazing tools where we can prove how we are related. And I have a family tree now that has 78 million people on it, million people. And it's everyone from friends from camp and friends from college, but also Barack Obama. He is my aunt's fifth great aunt's brother's wife's sister's seventh great nephew. So we're practically brothers.
Right. Cousins.
Cousins. We got, and you know, Gwyneth Paltrow. And I'm not boasting, because everyone has these. It's one big family, and there are these amazing websites you can go on to figure out how you're related to everyone else on this great big world family tree. And so that's part of it, is to unite everyone in this big family tree. If you go to my website, not to plug my own website, but I want to plug my own website.
We need all the links we can get here.
globalfamilyreunion.com. If you go there, it'll give you easy steps on how you can figure out how you're related to everyone else in the world. And it's really remarkable. It's just an amazing feeling. And I can't wait for this event, because I think it's going to be super fun. And I want you there. And, you know, your listeners are the perfect demographic, because you can travel and you get to meet these amazing people. There are going to be thousands of amazing people. And it's also on the grounds of the old New York's World's Fair. So, which to me is, I love that historic element to it.
Now, how many people do we need to break the world record?
We need 4,514. So yes, I could use everyone out there. Listen, it's going to be, everyone is invited, all 7 billion members of the human family. But what if you can establish a link to me by going to these websites, then you get a special bracelet and are part of the world's biggest family photo. It's also going to be Morgan Spurlock, who made Super Size Me, where he ate McDonald's. He's making a film about it. So if you come, you can be part of the film. You can hear Sister Sledge. You can see Nick Kroll, who's a wonderful, hilarious comedian. He'll be there. There are going to be dozens of interesting speakers. And it's a benefit for Alzheimer's. So there's going to be a very low ticket fee, like 10, 20 bucks. But any proceeds will go to Alzheimer's.
Yeah, what more could you want, you know? And you'll be breaking a world record, you know? We only need 0.001% of your 78 million to go and we can break the family record.
Exactly. I like the way you put that.
Yeah. So guys, globalfamilyreunion.com. If you haven't ever been to New York City, that's the perfect reason to go and visit New York City. If you have, you know how awesome it'll be. You know, every time I go up there, I only live 2.5 hours away. Every time I go up, there's always something fun going on, something fun to do. So like you said, a good reason to travel up there. I will be doing my best to be there. I'm 99% sure I'll be there, AJ. We're cousins. How could I bail on you, right?
Exactly. And I do need you to send me your grandparents' names and birthdays. That's one of the easiest ways to get onto the tree, is just send me that information. Please send it. Then we can figure out how exactly we are cousins, because we are.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, we're not going to let you get out of here without touching on travel just a little bit. We talked about how, you know, we can travel in our minds and how we can turn this idea of creating a lifestyle, even if it is at home, into a travel-related thing. But one of my favorite questions to ask people is, you know, travel mistakes or mishaps, because everyone seems to think, hey, they travel all the time, they must have it down. But really, I make more mistakes than probably someone who doesn't travel a lot. And throughout all your experiments, has there been a time where travel has kind of butted up against something you were trying to do and led to some interesting, weird experience? You talked about how you constantly, when you're a year of living biblically, you know, kind of profiled, I guess, when you're trying to go on a plane. Did you ever try to do something or anything like that that was really crazy?
Well, I mean, as you say, it is, I'm no expert. I get in travel bungles all the time. I mentioned the fact that we did not renew our kids' passports. And there again, you have to just make the best. So I tried to be a traveler, an adventurer in New York City. And also, even we spent all this time at the passport office. You know, it's horrible, but I tried to reframe it and be like, well, this is an adventure. This is an interesting adventure in red tape. Let's see if I, you know, trying to figure it out. I once interviewed these great artists, Christo and Jean-Claude, who are the ones who wrapped the Reichstag. They do these massive art pieces, like in Central Park. They put up, a few years ago, they put up 10,000 gates with little orange pieces of fabric. They call the gates in Central Park. I don't know if you've heard of that. To do that art project, that took them 26 years to get permission from New York. And I asked them, I said, well, that must have driven you crazy. And Christo said, it did in some ways, but I also see that negotiating the bureaucracy is part of my art, which I thought was a wonderful way to reframe this horrible, boring part of their life. So in a sense, I try to do that when I travel and think of the, you know, dealing with the visas and all the ridiculous rules that various countries have. I just try to say, well, this is interesting. You know, how can I learn from this? This is an insight into their culture. So instead of just saying that travel is when I get to the Prada or the Louvre, like, you know, saying it's all part of the travel, even the crazy, boring delays at airports. And what can you do there to make life interesting?
Yeah, I think that's really cool. Don't feel too bad, because I've been stuck in Singapore before when my passport was too full. So, you know, we all have these this red tape around passports. And AJ, we've talked about the world's largest family reunion. Is there anything else in the pipeline that we should be looking out for, either personally or professionally from you?
That I have like 150% focused on this family reunion, so I don't have much. I do sometimes do an advice column for Esquire online, which is, it's crowdsourced advice. So I have about 150,000 Facebook followers. So I'll put out a question from a reader, and then they'll all weigh in. And a lot of them are travel related. A few months ago, I had one about the armrest etiquette on airplanes, which was fascinating. You know, how do you deal with armrest hogs? And if you're in the middle seat, what are your rights? Should you be allowed both armrests from if you're in the middle seat? There were some very interesting ideas. There's one about that maybe you should split it up horizontally so that the guy in the middle seat gets the front part of the armrest and the guy on the aisle gets the back part. There's also just being totally honest and saying, my elbows are killing me. I really need... And there was another interesting idea that I fear is going to happen, but that, you know, airlines, they are monetizing in any way they can. Are they going to start selling rights to the armrest? Like, are you going to have to pay $10 extra to be able to use the armrest? I bet it's going to happen in 10 years.
Yeah, very cool. If you guys are interested in that, that's a really neat idea with the crowdsourcing. We'll link to that, to the archives of that in the show notes, and we'll link to everything that AJ's talked about here as well as the books. I suggest you guys pick up some copies of them. They're really great. AJ, thanks so much for coming on the show. Ever since I first got my hands on the Know-It-All 8 years ago, I've been a huge fan. I can't thank you enough for the hours of laughter and enjoyment I've had from reading your book. Before I let you go, just remind people one more time how they can connect with you, and of course, how they can all show up at the world's largest family reunion and help us shatter the world record.
Absolutely. Yes. Please go to globalfamilyreunion.com, or you can go to my website, which is ajjacobs.com, or even email me at info@worldfamily.us. And we will figure out how you're related to whoever you want to be related to, Obama, Gwyneth Paltrow. Unfortunately, you can also find out you're related to Jeffrey Dahmer. So it's not all positive, but I love feeling that I'm part of this world community, and I want you guys in there too. And I gotta say, Travis, I love your show and your website and the way you inspire people. And I believe we have a very similar idea, that always try new things, always be out there looking for new experimental ideas to open your mind. And so thank you for inspiring me.
Oh, my pleasure, AJ. Thanks again for coming on. I'm hoping that maybe someday I can come up to New York City and write a blog post from the infamous treadmill where you wrote Drop Dead Healthy.
I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, come on up. It's ready for you.
Thanks again, AJ.
Thank you, Travis.
Hey guys, if you want to know more about AJ, if you want to know more about his books or any of the articles that he's writing for publications all over the world, you can find all that at his main page, ajjacobs.com. Also, we will be linking anything we talked about in the show notes, including links to his books. That'll take you to Amazon. You can download them from there. You can order the soft cover, hard cover, whatever you want. That's at the show notes at extrapackofpeanuts.com/AJ. So you can get the books. I urge you, if you haven't read the books, go get at least one of them. They are hilarious. AJ is actually funnier in writing than he is in person, which is incredibly hard to pull off. These books will have you laughing out loud. It doesn't matter which one you pick. Pick all three, pick one, give it a shot. I know you're really going to like it. Don't forget also AJ's record-breaking attempt, the Global Family Reunion. You can find out all the details about that, globalfamilyreunion.com. That's going to be June 6th, 2015 in New York City. If you want to be part of this historic event, make sure you start planning it now. Mark your calendars, June 6th, 2015. I will be going to that. Of course, AJ will be there. There's going to be tons of awesome guests. There's going to be 4,000 plus people that are going to be your relatives, your cousins. So make sure to mark your calendars, globalfamilyreunion.com. You can also go there and you can see how you're related to different people. Barack Obama, myself, AJ, all these different people in history. So globalfamilyreunion.com. I hope to see you there. We are now in the heart of podcast gluttony, right in the middle of week two. And if you like what we're doing here, releasing an episode every Monday through Friday for the entire month of September, 22 episodes in all, please let us know. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes or Stitcher or however you listen to it. You can shoot me an email, trav@extrapackofpeanuts. And of course, you can leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. We'd really, really appreciate it. If you guys like what we're doing, we're going to continue to do it. Today's feature review comes from Tim Corner in Mass. He says, great podcast. I happened upon Travis on Twitter and discovered his podcast after going to his website. He does an excellent job of engaging his guests and lets them speak about their experiences uninterrupted while still keeping the interview going in a fluid direction. I really enjoy his guests. Each one is unique, and I find the whole show to be inspiring people like myself to begin traveling even more. Keep up the great work. Thank you so much, Tim Corner and Mass. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in today and for supporting the Extra Pack of Peanuts podcast and podcast gluttony. Until tomorrow, happy free travels.